and I'm Jordan Crook.
And we are hosting the Original Content Podcast, where we cover the latest streaming news and also review some of the new releases. This week, we're going to be covering a whole bunch of headlines and then reviewing the Cloverfield Paradox, which was just released on Netflix. Daryl Etherington is not with us this week because basically he's been focused on real space and real spaceships instead of fake spaceships.
Yeah, we're short one Canadian, but I think we'll get through.
So yeah, let's get into the news. First up, we have this story about Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's going to be in this Western TV series for Amazon called Outrider. I think both of us were a little surprised when we saw this headline.
Yeah, I mean, like, literally, I just read the headline alone, and it is Arnold Schwarzenegger to top line Outrider Western TV series in works at Amazon. And your mind just immediately goes to question marks. Like, have you heard Arnold Schwarzenegger not do his natural accent ever? I don't think I ever have.
No. And I think there was, like, some recent movies, like this zombie movie that he was in a couple years ago, that where it really didn't make a lot of sense that he had the accent, but it, you know, no one really says anything. They're just like, he plays a character who happens to be from Austria, but we will never say that, and it's fine.
Well, and that's always been the case, and it always has been fine. Like, even, like, his super old movies, like Twins, you know? Like, there was never any explanation. Or like a Kindergarten Cop. Like, there was never an explanation as to why that character was Austrian, but that just was the case, and it was fine.
Yeah, and I think, well, part of it is that mostly he acts in either things that are contemporary or futuristic, and so it really doesn't need an explanation, you know? There are people from all sorts of countries everywhere, it's fine. If it's a Western, it seems a little bit more challenging to swallow, but I mean, we really don't know too much. Well, that's not true. Actually, there is a little bit of a plot description here. It's set in the late 1800s in Oklahoma Indian Territory, and he's going to play someone who immigrated to the U.S. from Europe as a child. So there will be an explanation, and then probably they won't talk about it much, if I were to guess.
Well, and that it does make some sense to a degree, because like that was the time of immigration, right? So we think of like Westerns as being like just a bunch of Southern accents mashed together, you know? But in reality, like, that time period was all about immigration. Why wouldn't there be, you know, a European traveling west as well as...
Yeah, that's a fair point. I think, you know, now that we're talking about it more, it seems kind of strange, more to do with our expectations of, or at least my expectations of a Western film or TV show versus like what the West was actually like. Now that we're like sort of looking at it, it's like, yeah, that all seems fine. Yeah, that makes sense. Sure, why not?
Does this feel a little bit like Follow? Like, I don't know if you've noticed this or whatever, but during the Super Bowl, there were all these commercials that like called to Game of Thrones, right? Like Viking commercials and like, you know, medieval style commercials, and it felt like people were trying to capitalize on that. Do you think that this is maybe the beginning of the Westworld follow on?
Yeah, I think there's yeah, that seems pretty likely, because there was Westworld, obviously, and then there was Godless, which came out last year on Netflix. And so not to say that Westerns ever completely went away, but I suspect one of the reasons we're seeing a little bit of an uptick is because of Westworld.
Yeah. And then you have Red Dead Redemption later this year, which I'm excited about. It has nothing to do with streaming, but it's very Western.
You know, these things get closer together. I'm sure like all that stuff gets looked at. Have you been following, like, have you seen any new movies with Arnold Schwarzenegger? Because, I mean, the other aspect is that obviously he was in politics for a while. He came back to Hollywood, but he hasn't really had any huge hits since then. I mean, I think he's been doing interesting work. But, you know, certainly the most recent Terminator movie did not make a ton of money.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything with him in it since, like, the 90s. And, you know, I liked some Kindergarten Cop and Twins. Those are good movies. I never really got into Terminator, but I understand that a lot of people really love it. And it's kind of classic to a lot of people. I'm interested to see, like, you know, how he makes his resurgence. I'm interested to see if this does well, to be honest, because there's something about, like, with all due respect to Arnold Schwarzenegger, like, there's something about him that feels very, like, kitschy, you know? Like, it's just not quite, like, he's not going to ever move you to tears. That's what I feel. You know what I mean? And so, like, I don't know if this is going to be that type of series that really challenges him to reach a new level, or if it's going to kind of fit right into what he's always done and just be very exciting and with a hint of comedy, you know? So we'll see.
Right. I mean, I will say, so that zombie movie I was talking about earlier, it's called Maggie, and it's actually this, like, very serious, bleak movie where his daughter has been bitten by a zombie and she's, like, slowly dying, essentially, and he's going to have, he takes her back to his farm and he's going to have to kill her at some point. And I don't think that it's a great movie, but it is a really different side of him, and where he, like, never, like, cracks any jokes, never acts like a badass, and is basically just, like, really bummed out the whole time, as you would be.
Yeah.
So I think he is trying to show his range, just that, you know, none of these projects have been, you know, really taken off yet, so people haven't necessarily seen that. I don't think he's necessarily a great actor, but he's definitely trying to do different stuff, and I'm interested to see it, at least.
Yeah, I respect the taking on new challenges, and I love a good Western. I'm excited. I mean, if this ends up being pretty good, I'll be excited about it. The producer, it's co-written and executive produced by Trey Calloway, who does The Messengers and CSI New York. I don't know what to think of that, but
right, you're just kind of like, okay, those sound like things that exist that yeah. I don't really have much interest in watching, but maybe good. I have no idea. I just don't have any interest in watching them. Or actually, I don't know anything about Messengers, so.
Yeah, I, you know, whatever. Amazon is, I think, at the very least, we can say that Amazon seems to be consolidating its efforts a little bit and doing good stuff as opposed to lots of stuff. So hopefully this falls under that category and ends up being really good. We won't know, obviously, until it comes out. Do we have any idea of when this is going to happen, or it's just got greenlit?
It basically just got greenlit, so I would imagine, you know, the timing stuff will come out as it gets closer, but, I mean, I would imagine, I think probably the absolute earliest would be, you know, the end of 2018, but maybe more likely 2019.
Yeah. Okay, well, talk to you in 2019.
Yeah, so I guess the other piece of kind of content announcements that also probably may not come out until late this year, early next year, is now it's about Apple, and they are developing this show called Little America, which is going to be this anthology series from Kumail Nanjiani and Emily Gordon, who made The Big Sick for Amazon, actually, and then plus Alan Yang, who's one of the showrunners on Master of None, and Lee Eisenberg. So it's basically going to be like an anthology series about stories about immigrants.
I think this is going to be really good. That's yeah. like my initial impression based on who's writing it. And I loved The Big Sick. I think Kumail Nanjiani is like such a gem. And I think that he's only going to become more and more prominent as time goes on and kind of show what he's capable of. And this sounds like something that has some perfect timing behind it, you know, like with everything that's going on in the world with DACA, the conversation I feel like is so important, and to like show, you know, just to show some truth and also, you know, have fun with it. I think it's going to be really, really interesting. I'm excited.
Yeah. It seems like one of those projects where the idea like is like interesting, but also makes me a little bit nervous. But then when you see who's involved with it, I just immediately think this is going to be amazing, because, I mean, Master of None is a show that I don't necessarily love, but I mean, I really like respect it. And like, I'm, you know, I think like they do really good work. It just doesn't 100% click with me. And that episode that they did in Master of None, which is like all about like immigrant parents, I thought was amazing. And then, yeah, The Big Sick, I also loved. So I'm pretty excited about this. And it also just seems like Apple is, you know, just another show from Apple where you're like, oh, crap. Like, I definitely want to see this.
Yeah, Apple seems to be really diligent in putting a lot of money behind, I mean, I don't know how much money, but I assume it was plenty, behind, like, really big names, as opposed to, like, being more experimental. Like, they'd just rather get it right, which I think is smart for them, given that they're, like, late a little bit to the game. And I'm going to be interested to find out what the format of this show is. Is it single episodes? I mean, it seems like it, right? Anthology series. So it's going to be like each episode is its own story, which I think is going to be really cool. And obviously anthologies are so hot right now. So yeah, I think that's going to be great.
It's going to be 30 minutes per episode, which seems like
not enough.
You know, they've got to cover a lot of ground in 30 minutes if they're trying to tell a complete story.
Yeah, that seems like it's really difficult. And, you know, like sitcoms obviously like live in that 30 minute realm. So maybe not a lot, you know, and I feel like with something like this, you actually don't have to do so much expository work. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like you can just dive right in and the writing should take care of it for you. But we'll see. It could also be like very observational, right? Like it might not have to be so plot heavy. It's not like a Black Mirror where you have to do the full setup of a new world and then you have to, you know, create character tension and then you have to build a plot and then you have to build a twist and a climax, and like all of these things aren't really necessary in a comedy. It's just let the writing kind of speak for itself and let the actors do the heavy lifting.
Yeah, it could be closer to something like High Maintenance, which I haven't seen a ton of, but I, you know, my sense is it is that sort of more observational style where instead of like trying to like give you like a, you know, a full three-act story, it's more of these like little vignettes of life.
Yeah, exactly. Which I have a friend who's obsessed with High Maintenance and I haven't seen enough of it either, but I think I should give it a try.
Cool. Well, so those are kind of the most interesting content announcements this week. There is some other news, one which unfortunately we have covered a fair amount on the podcast already, but it seems like we should not ignore it, which is more news about Logan Paul.
Yeah. This kid, man, I'm so ready for this to be over. Like so the story goes that Logan Paul, who was suspended from Google's preferred program, which is the preferred advertising platform, for posting the video in the Japanese suicide forest of a dead body. He made this whole apology and then took, you know, 2 weeks off to reflect, which is not much time, and then posted this long video about suicide prevention where he did all these interviews, and it just felt, you know, it was the right content with the wrong intention, and it felt that way. It was very clear it was that. And then he is now back to his old antics and has been suspended 100% from Google's advertising revenue. So he is not making any of the money, which was supposed to be between like 40K and 600K a year or a month, which is a lot of money. And he posted like pictures of tasing like a rat and stuff like that. I try not to dive into that corner of the internet, but I agree with Google. That's kind of what it comes down to.
Yeah, I mean, we should say that they're saying right now this is a temporary suspension, but they also say this is a pattern of behavior. I mean, they explicitly, you know, they're not calling out a specific video. They're just saying there's a pattern of behavior here. And again, neither of us, I think, are experts on the content of Logan Paul, but that does seem to be the case. So it's kind of hard to imagine, you know, how. Because it seemed like what happened here, right, is that he got into trouble, apologized, and then kind of just thought, okay, I'm going to do what I did before, and that isn't going over super well. So you wonder, I mean, how is it possible, and is he even interested in meaningfully changing, you know, the kinds of content that he posts versus just, you know, apologizing once and then going back to doing what he was doing before?
Well, I think it's like a dual case of using Band-Aids instead of doing surgery. You know, like on Logan Paul's side, like he put a Band-Aid on what he did and came back and acted essentially the same way that he's always acted, which it's true in real life. Like, if you go and hurt someone that's close to you, and then you pretend like nothing, you know, say you're sorry and then go back acting the same way, you might feel like the relationship's exactly the same, but it's not, right? Like, it's been broken in a way, and you have to rebuild that. And then on the other side, you have Google and YouTube, which this isn't the first time that they've done these temporary suspensions. I think, is it PewDiePie or PewDiePie?
PewDiePie.
PewDiePie. They do the same thing with that guy, right? Like, they, like, temporarily suspend and stuff. Like, they have yet to actually say, like, no, we're bringing out the banhammer. We're done with this kind of behavior. Like, our platform's more important. So it's just a bunch of band-aids. And I just think that's lazy on both sides.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to figure out exactly what the right approach would be, because I don't know that you immediately want to just ban everyone. But it's true that, like, just, when a lot of the people who are, you know, being on your platform don't necessarily, and we've talked about this before, you know, don't necessarily have, and in some ways are known for not sort of having these filters, then how do you sort of balance that where you basically say, well, the people who are most visible on our platform, we don't want them to be like these kind of idiots, but, you know, how do we handle that in the right way? I don't know.
Well, and like, it seems like I'm checking it right now, because this suspension is like almost adds a little bit more like gray to the matter, because the reason that they cited was a pattern of behavior, right? And like, what he did actually doesn't, I mean, so they did say that he deliberately tried to monetize a video that clearly violated its guidelines, but they didn't say which video that might be. And his latest videos have been, you know, tasering a rat, suggested swallowing Tide Pods. So those to me don't, I would have to read the fine print, but that doesn't seem like a clear content violation. It might be for the ad platform, but not to be banned from YouTube entirely. So the whole idea of like banning him for recent behavior just seems so, do you know what I'm saying? It's like very subjective, and it adds even less clarity to the situation. Like, and this is a subjective issue. You can't set a list of rules of what can and can't happen that doesn't have some subjectivity in it. But it's just like, oh, you made a mess for us for the last 6 weeks, and we're pissed, so no money for you.
Yeah.
And it's like, it needs to be clearer than that.
Yeah, I mean, I think one is, you know, hopefully they've communicated more to him and to his, you know, his team than they've said publicly. And so there's maybe some suggestions for improvement. And because I assume that their best case scenario is not that he just goes away completely, but just that he, like, stops kind of fucking up like this. I do also think that it is fair to say, look, you know, in terms of what's on the platform, we're going to be pretty, you know, loose, as long as it's not violating these very specific rules and things that are like just way out of bounds. But we can also say as a platform that it's fine that you do dumb shit, but the kind of content that we actually want to support monetarily with promotion and things like that, that we want to be a little bit more selective and discerning about, I think is a reasonable position to take.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with that. I just, you know, it's hard because these platforms now, it's like the new TV, right? Like, TV is governed by the FCC. And when you do and say things that are not okay, you get fined. And it has this framework that's been built for a really long time around what is and is not acceptable, or movies. You know, they have ratings for a reason. And there's people that go and figure out what exactly the difference between showing like the upper thigh and the hip bone and all of those things mean, you know what I mean? And that just doesn't exist on the internet, and these platforms are figuring it out for themselves, and it's gonna be messy until they really find out what their line in the sand is, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting comparison, because I mean, certainly, there are a lot of complaints about how, like, you know, the MPAA, like, rates movies, and so it's not to say that any of these organizations does a perfect job, but just
absolutely
that,
not.
That they've, at least they've gotten together and said, hey, it is actually important to us that we try to, like, figure this out, as opposed to kind of throwing open the doors, and then when you get into trouble, kind of, as you said before, kind of band-aiding it, but instead of, you know, really trying to be a little bit more proactive about, let's figure out, not even necessarily as YouTube, but as an industry, what are we comfortable with and not comfortable with.
And to be clear, I don't think that I am advocating for some, like, outside organization of randos to, like, monitor the internet. Like, you know what I mean? That's not what I'm saying. I just think that, like, if 2018 isn't a very thoughtful year for these platforms, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and beyond, like, this only becomes a bigger problem for everyone. And it bleeds into more important things. Like, Logan Paul, like, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, he's, like, some kid. Like, you know, the same kid exists all across the U.S. and beyond, just saying and doing stupid shit. That doesn't really matter. But, like, when it comes into our politics, and, you know, when it degrades the credibility of the media, you know, and stuff like that, we have a bigger problem at hand. So these are small instances that represent a much bigger problem that needs to be solved and thought about really carefully.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with all of that.
Good to hear.
We're probably not going to solve that all right now. So let's move on to our final piece of news, which is also, this is going to be sort of like a hybrid news discussion, which will become a review as we talk about it, which is...
way to spill the beans, Cloverfield... Anthony.
Yeah, I know. I like hand-holding our listeners when I can. You uh-huh. know? I don't want them to get a little confused about where they are in the show.
Right. My sister got really mad about our transition, so I hope she's pleased with this one.
We're working on it. So this movie, The Cloverfield Paradox, this is a movie that has been known about for a while. I think it was originally called God Particle, but everyone sort of assumed for the last couple of years that it was going to be a Cloverfield movie, because they're always really secretive about the Cloverfield movies. And then suddenly, and it was supposed to be released this year, like a normal release, and then they started to have stories about, oh, actually Netflix might be interested. And then suddenly there was this, you know, on Sunday night at this, you know, one of the first commercials during the Super Bowl was a commercial for the Cloverfield Paradox. And then at the very end, it says coming to Netflix very soon, which actually meant
tonight,
at the very end of, yeah, at the end of the game.
Which, like, honestly, when I was watching the Super Bowl, I did not realize that that's what it meant. I feel like they spent $5 million and could have been a little bit clearer, like, after the game.
Yeah, I wondered about that, like, how much of that was, you know, the network saying we don't want a commercial that is very explicitly saying as soon as the Super Bowl ends, turn off regular TV and go to Netflix, and so part of the negotiation was being vague, or because otherwise, yeah, it seems really strange that you wouldn't say. Well, after the game, because that was part of what was made it crazy, was like, you're like, what, like, it's going live tonight, that's insane.
Well, that's a possibility, but to be like, if we're looking at it that way, let's think about it. What NBC had on slate for the end of the game was This Is Us, so the audience there, like, people who are really excited about the Cloverfield Paradox are probably not the same people that are really excited about watching, you know, the climactic episode of This Is Us, and vice yeah. versa. So I it's possible. I think that what you're saying is possible, but I also think, like, it's if that's the case, that was kind of dumb.
I agree, because I mean, it was part of the reason I say that was because I was reading a lot of the stories about this, you know, Sunday night and going into Monday morning, and all of them were talking about, like, oh man, like, this is maybe, like, competing with that episode of This Is Us. Which
was a big episode.
Yes, but it was a little strange because, A, like, I was way more interested in Cloverfield than I am in This Is Us. No offense to This Is Us.
Whatever.
Which I hear is actually a decent show.
It's a great show.
And also, you know, I think, like, part of the way Netflix works is that when something goes live isn't necessarily when you immediately have to watch it. So just the fact that, I mean, that seems obvious, but to me, that idea of, like, well, the show is going live right after the game doesn't mean that you're necessarily going to watch it immediately after the game. It's just about creating that, like, buzz, that kind of, you know, ballsy move of saying, yeah, we're going to announce the, you know, it, like you know, Beyonce, like, dropping a new album or something, just without any sort of fanfare, just being like, hey, this exists, and we're putting it out there now. That doesn't mean, you know, everyone has to rush to Netflix right away, but just to get people talking.
And, like, far more is on the line for This Is Us, because honestly, the truth of the matter is that you go watch either at any time you want. Like, you could have DVR'd, you could have it on demand, you could have Hulu, right, which has it the next day. Like, both of these things are available at any point, but This Is Us has way more on the line, because those This Is Us ads were probably selling at a far higher price than normal This Is Us ads on any other night. So I guess what you're saying makes a lot of sense. Like, NBC definitely wanted people to watch. Anyways, whatever. The point is that they did this ad and launched the movie, like, all in the same day, which kind of shocked everyone and was very exciting to everyone. And then people watched the movie. As did we.
Right. And we should, I mean, I think TechCrunch, I think, might have actually had one of the very first reviews of it, which Josh Constein, one of our coworkers, basically, I think he decided to just watch it and review it, because he was like, I don't think anyone's reviewed this yet. Let's just do it. Which I didn't even see until I woke up the next morning. And he seemed somewhat positive on the film, which is pretty unusual if you compare it to most of the other reviews, because it has been just destroyed by critics.
Yeah, he's way more positive about it than I was, that's for sure. I watched it yesterday to do this, and I actually started it once and fell asleep. Which, like, I'm not saying is all the movie. Like, I was a tired person, and I probably started it too late, knowing that I was really, really tired. But, and then I watched it again yesterday, and for the first part of watching it yesterday, my girlfriend was around, and she was like, oh, don't put on this scary movie while I'm around. She, like, hates scary films of any kind. And she watched it for a couple minutes and was just like, ah, this is no big deal. I'm not afraid of this, which I thought was really funny. The whole movie was just like, why is this happening over and over and over again? Which is very, actually, to be fair, that's very J.J. Abrams. Like, Lost was just a bunch of whys. Like, why are there polar bears? Like, why is there a ghost? What is this smoke monster? Like, there's just so many questions. But with Lost, like, you eventually slowly got answers to things. Whereas this was very much like, why is this happening? Why is that happening? And then at the end, you're like, why did it end that way? And then it's
right.
over.
And we should say, like, we'll keep this maybe spoiler-free for now. We may want to talk about that stuff a little later on.
Yeah.
But without spoiling anything, the basic concept of the movie is that the world is like basically running out of energy, and fair enough, and things are kind of falling apart. And so to try to solve that, they basically built this space station with a particle accelerator on it, and they're like running these experiments in the hopes of like getting a new source of essentially infinite energy
that will like solve world peace, essentially.
Right. And then basically at some point they run it and it seems to work, but then things start to go wrong, and then things increasingly go wrong. Some of the astronauts start to die. And that's probably about as much as we should say about the plot. I guess the last thing maybe we could say about the plot is just it's not obvious at first that this is a direct sequel to either of the Cloverfield movies, which themselves seem kind of connected, but not necessarily like you, but each one is an immediate sequel to the other. There's more this sort of like loose connection, and I think that's again true here, although more stuff kind of comes up towards the end.
Well, and like this, I didn't see the first two Cloverfield movies, but I have a pretty solid understanding of what happened. And the bigger difference, I feel like, is that this is less of a closed set. Like, you see what's happening on the space station, but you also get glimpses of what's going on down on planet Earth. Whereas, like, 10 Cloverfield Lane was very much like three or four people. And so it's an expanded kind of storyline in a way. But I just was like, even stuff that should have been really terrifying was undermined by just like a, what the hell? You know what I mean? Like, it's just like, what are you talking about? Why? You know what I mean? And there were a lot of random, well, you know, it's called a paradox. So there were paradoxes, and you're just supposed to accept that those paradoxes make sense along the lines of the film, but they had no explanation as to why this would happen and not something else. And they kept just being like, it's chaos. It's chaos, you know? And it's like, okay, well.
Right. It's this weird thing in between where it's not that they didn't try to explain things. There was a lot of technobabble in this movie. It was just that none of the technobabble actually explained anything. It was always just like, wow, you talked for a minute about, like, you know, this stuff, and I don't think that was illuminating in any way. And also, the science that you're talking was complete bullshit, and, like, none of the, you know, like, none of that, like, I wish, like, either, like, it had, like, been explained in a way that made sense, and you're like, okay, like, that is fine, or there had just been no explanation at all, and it had just been completely, like, surreal and weird shit, but instead it was just, like, you know, not particularly scary stuff would happen, and then people would, like, talk and spew nonsense for 30 seconds about why it had happened, and you'd be like, that doesn't make any sense, what?
Yeah. Pretty much. So, yeah. That's what happened. I mean, and, like, I thought parts of it were cool. Like, it was super, like, the set for the space station was, like, super futuristic. There were some things that I thought, like, you know how sometimes you're watching a sci-fi movie and what they choose to have changed in the future doesn't seem to make sense. Like, they, right. Like, for years and years and years, sci-fi movies and spaceships, big space stations and battleships and stuff have had, like, A deck, B deck, C deck, right?
Right.
And then, like, out of nowhere, they're like, let's go to X deck. And it's like, why would you change that of all things? You know what I mean?
I guess I assumed what that meant was that there were actually at least, like, a whole bunch of I mean, because it is a big space station, so there's probably an A deck and a B deck, but, like, that's never mentioned. All you hear about is X deck. That's it.
It's like this one deck they do everything on is X deck. I don't get that. And then, like, there were other things that I thought were cool. Like, they had 3D printed food on the space station. So she was, like, getting a bagel, and it was 3D printed. And then, like, there was a little post-it note on it that was, like, worst bagel machine ever. You know, which, like, felt, like, very cool and cute. Like, I got into that bit. So it was, like, some decisions were good and some were bad. I did like the kind of futuristic set of the whole thing, and the spacesuits were cool. They were very Tesla-esque, or I guess SpaceX-esque, which is hard to say. But, yeah, overall, I was like, damn, that's like an hour and 48 minutes that I'm never going to get back.
Well, I would also say, like, I mean, I think the beginning of the movie to me was a lot stronger than the end. Like, just like the setup, I think even then, like, the writing isn't that great. It, like, people are still, like, kind of giving these long speeches that, like, that don't really resemble how people talk in real life and are just sort of clunky. But, like, the way that, you know, like, they kind of go from Earth and then they go up into the space station, and there's, like, this montage showing, like, the first 2 years on the space station. Like, that stuff I all really liked. I thought that was pretty strong. And then once things start to go wrong, then, I mean, in terms of the plot, like, where things go wrong for the astronauts is where I think the movie starts to lose me, too, because, like you're saying, it's really not that scary. I mean, maybe that's, like, the fundamental, like, all the other stuff, like, being dumb or silly, like, I think in a horror movie, you, on some level, I mean, it can certainly hurt it, but, like, if you were scared, I think you're like, okay, like, a lot of problems with that movie, but I had a good time because there were a couple times I jumped or, like, it's going to give me nightmares, and I'm still glad I saw it. It just wasn't scary at all. Like, it just kind of, you know, stuff happened that was kind of, like, with one exception, which is, like, there's a new character who's introduced, like, about a third of the way through the movie, and her introduction, I thought, was, like, really well done. But, like, nothing else in the movie is scary.
I didn't like that part. I thought there was one moment that was actually, like, a little bit scary, and it was, like, far more subtle, which we can talk about more in the spoiler bit. I mean, I'll say that, like, if you were really attached to the Cloverfield movies, I would understand your impulse to want to watch this. I agree that, like, the montages at the beginning and stuff were really good. The movie I would compare it to is, and this might not make sense at first, but, like, did you ever see Life with Ryan Reynolds?
Oh, no, I haven't seen it. I've heard that's also not great.
It's a horrible film. It's horrible. Okay. Like, I went to go see it with a bunch of my friends in the theater, and a bunch of them are, like, really snobby film people, kind of like you. And they hated it. But I actually bought it on iTunes and watch it sometimes because it actually truly terrifies me. Like, if I want to be really thrilled and terrified, like, no matter how many times I watch it, it scares the bejesus out of me. And this film failed to do that. Like, this film was just a bad film. It didn't actually scare me. Whereas, like, Life is a bad film, but it scares me, and its ending is, like, even scarier. Do you know what I mean? Like, so I just felt like this tried to do something like that, but didn't, you know, like, just didn't make it there.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the other thing about Life, again, not having seen it, but just, you know, knowing that, like, Ryan Reynolds and Jake Gyllenhaal aren't in it. And then this movie, I think there's no one in it who's quite as famous, but there's, like, a whole bunch of people who are very talented actors that you will have probably seen before, like Daniel Brühl and Gugu Mbatha-Ra, I think is how you pronounce it, and Chris O'Dowd, and so, like, there in both cases there's an element of, like, why are you in this? What are you doing? Like, because they're all doing a good. I mean, again, the ones in Cloverfield Paradox, I think, are doing the best they can with a script that is not good, but there's a sense of, like, why did you read this script and think I want to be in this movie?
Yeah, tell our listeners the line that you chose to write down from the movie, just to give you an idea, right, of what this script is like.
It's let's see, here we go. We can't stay here. This dimension is eating us alive. It's not like Snakes on a Plane, where, like, and the movie knows that that's a bad line of dialogue. That the movie thinks that's a, like, good, scary, intense line of dialogue, and you're just sitting there being like, what? What did you just say?
We still don't know what's going on. Like, like, I understand the basic premise of what they were trying to say was happening, but, like, with no explanation as to, like, why this and not that. Like, it was just, I feel like. Also, maybe we should move into the, you're supposed to handle transitions. My sister's going to be mad, but
I was trying to get as much out before we got into spoilers, but
wait, what do you have? What do you have? Tell me, because I'm out.
No, I wanted to finish that thought. That's all. Okay. Let's move into spoilers. So if you have not seen The Cloverfield Paradox, now is the time to stop listening. And now we're going to talk about all the things that happened in the movie that were really dumb without any sort of hiding it. Yeah. Jordan, what did you think was dumb in this movie?
Oh, okay. I'm going to have to find my list. So, like we said before, it starts with these montages that are showing, like, okay, the Earth is screwed if this doesn't work. It shows them trying for 2 years to get this particle accelerator to work, and it doesn't. And then you get to the moment that it works and you're like, okay, this is great. And then they can't find the Earth. And I was like, okay, well, that's also great. Because, like, how scary, right? Like, the whole space station is busted and they don't know where they are. They can't find the Earth. It's crazy. And then randomly, this woman is in a wall. And that's where it really lost me. Like, this brand new character shows up and she's, like, trapped in the wiring of the wall. And from then on, I was pretty lost. And a bunch of other weird stuff happened. Like, one of the compartments just filled with water, like totally reasonlessly, and a guy's arm got sucked into a wall, and you're like, why is that happening? The one part that did scare me was when the lead engineer, or not engineer, but the mechanic guy, the one who was Yolkov, I think was his name, and he was the one who fixes everything on the ship. I actually, like, I was scared by the way that his demise went down, but I was actually really scared about his eye. Like, right after they get the particle accelerator working, he starts rubbing his eye and he's in all this pain. And right. I was like, oh man, whatever's going on with his eye has to be like the scariest shit in the world. And then randomly he's looking in the mirror and his eye like takes control and like looks over to the right, just one of them, which is super scary. And he starts talking to someone that we can't see. I was like, oh man, that's really scary too. And then it just kind of like spirals out and stops being interesting. Like the worms are missing and then the worms are in him. And the compass is in him, like in his stomach for some reason. And you're just like, wait, what the hell? Like that was actually going somewhere and now it's not. Like I just...
Yeah, that was probably like the most like promising story thread and they just dropped it.
Yeah, just for like some gore. You know what I mean? Like just for the sake of some gore and like some random stuff. Like, oh, now we can find the Earth. And I don't know. And there were like, there was this whole scene where this newscaster, right before they fire up the particle accelerator, he's like, this is going to collide two dimensions together and it's going to cause demons and monsters. And I was like, I didn't understand that part either. It was like, you know what I mean? Like, what?
Yeah.
I get the fear of dimensions colliding, but like, I would like that to be high stakes in a real way and not in a way that I'm like, oh, yeah, because there were ghosts in the past or there are ghosts in an alternate dimension and we're going to have to be afraid of those. Like, and then they actually showed like a demon spirit flying over a hospital. And you're like, what is this? Like,
right. And it just seemed like, you know, like, yeah, like just very kind of dumb, like, you know, B-movie writing where like there's no reason why this person would be saying this. There, like, there's no sense of like, you know, where this is coming from. It's just him laying this out so that the viewer has some preparation for what's about to happen, but it just doesn't feel real or interesting in any way. It's just like kind of like thuds and like, oh, okay, I guess there's gonna be monsters soon. And then part of the problem also is that the only reason that's there is because it tells you if you see in the other two Cloverfield movies, you're like, oh, okay, there are going to be monsters like in the Cloverfield movies. But there aren't, I mean, until the very, very end, there are no monsters either. It's just, like, weird shit happening. And so, like, which is, I mean, part of why there's just not a lot of, like, not only, like, is it not scary, but there's not, like, a lot of drama to it. You're just kind of like, all right, this weird thing happened. This weird thing happened. And in one case, I actually, even though it wasn't scary, I thought, like, what they did with his arm was, like, fun and interesting, and so I was, like, again, sort of intrigued by the film. But a lot of the other stuff is just really arbitrary, like, you know, again, like, yeah, definitely just, like, having the whole, like, the flooding and the exploding door and everything there. Just, you're like, okay, I guess that happened, whatever.
Yeah, I felt like there were I felt like the movie was trying really hard to set up these particular scenes. Like, they wanted a scene where worms explode out of a body. They wanted a scene where an arm disconnected from a body writes down a message. Like, they wanted a scene where a lady was trapped and, like, wired into a wall. And they wanted a scene where, like, space freezes a bunch of water. And they were like, how do we get these really interesting scenes into this movie? And, like, nobody cared to build a plot that makes sense around those themes or those scenes. So they were just like, This water will fill into this capsule that she's in because of the paradox. It's chaos. So that makes sense. Let's just write that it fills with water. And like the actual cinematic quality of that scene was good. Like the door to space starts detaching and essentially under the pressure and explodes off, and the second it explodes off, the whole thing freezes, and she's like kind of stuck frozen in this window, which is really cool. But like how we right. got there made no sense. So it was just annoying. Like you can't even enjoy the really good scenes because the way that we got there just is stupid.
I think that's true, and certainly, like, I mean, another movie to compare it to is Sunshine, the science fiction film from about 10 years ago, which I think does a really good job, until the end, which has some problems, but for the most part does a really good job of, like, this bad thing happens, but it's because they made this mistake when they were trying to accomplish something on their mission, and so it's like, you understand how each bad decision, or how, like, the best decision they made in a bad circumstance, like each thing leads to the next, and it feels like this sort of snowball effect. Here it just feels totally random. But then the flip side of that is, I think if the set pieces had been creative enough, then I still might have been willing to go along with it. Like, I'm like, okay, this explanation that it's just like the dimension is really mad at them because they're not in their home dimension is dumb, but if the stuff that happened had been creative enough, then I still would have been okay with it, which is why I was okay with the wires and the body thing, because that was just such an uncomfortable scene, and she's like screaming, and like everyone's like, oh my god, what do we do, this person's trapped in the wall and there's like wires coming out of her body, should we leave her, should we, what, and so that I think is that kind of stuff is good. But when it's just like the flooding is well done, but it's you've seen it, not the freezing, but like just seeing a room filled with water you've seen before, having like,
and you know, at least like with the, like, reason when you've seen it before, right, like you knew why right. the room was filling with water, like this made no sense.
Yeah. And then, like, having, like, the, like, wires, like, reach out to grab Chris O'Dowd, you're like, that's not scary, and it's not, I don't understand why that's happening. Or, like, and then when the Elizabeth Debicki character at the end is just, like, running around, like, killing people, like, you kind of understand why she's doing it, but it's not interesting again because, like, we haven't spent that much time with her. Like, basically, like, she shows up, and then you kind of cut to her once in a while sitting in this, like, hospital room. But other than that, like, you have no connection to her at all. So there's no, like, tension when, like, she goes bad. You're just like, oh, I guess that's happening now.
Well, and for those of you who haven't seen the movie, just to add some context to this Elizabeth Debicki situation. So she, when they arrive in the alternate universe after turning on this particle accelerator, she shows up in the wall because in that alternate universe that they traveled to, she was on that mission instead of our main character. And so because she was on that mission, she shows up on the space station. She just happened to land in a wall, I guess. And her whole thing is that, like, her Earth and her universe needs the particle accelerator, and she wants to keep it there and get it working for her world so that it saves her world. So she has some, like, she actually makes more sense in the film than I think anything else does, like, right. plot-wise. But I do want to say that I thought there was a huge opportunity lost, which I thought would have really brought the whole thing full circle, which was when you visit the alternate universe, and it has something to do with kind of time travel, and it felt very J.J. Abramsy, which was when you go to the other alternate universe, the space station has crashed in the ocean. And I felt like maybe as the movie went on that they were essentially setting it up for the same thing to happen in their universe, like everything that they had gone through was leading up to them causing their own demise, kind of the way that happens in these time travel plots where you're trying to prevent something from happening and in so doing actually cause it to happen inadvertently. And that's how it always was meant to happen, was you doing the loop of time travel. I thought they were going to do something like that, because at one point, you know, there's a huge explosion and part of the space station is breaking down and it's going to cause the whole thing to fall apart. And they go to try to save it. And I was like, oh, it's going to end with them crashing because they fell prey to this, you know, kind of trap of this loop of mistakes. But that's not what happened. It was just so, so dumb.
Yeah, it seemed like basically because everything that happens in the movie is so random, you were like just trying to like make some sense of it. You're like, oh, maybe it all fits together this way. And it's like, no, it doesn't.
It just doesn't at all. And then I think we'll get to the end, right? Where they...
Yeah.
So they finally fix everything, or, like, as much as things can be fixed. And I think there's only, like, 3 astronauts left of, like, 10. And...
Yeah.
They decide, okay, let's go back to Earth. And
I think there's only 2 left at that point, yeah.
Right. And they're trying to get back to Earth, their Earth, in the right universe. And... our main character's husband, who's been back at home this whole time, and he has his own kind of very limited subplot, is talking to the...
Yeah, it felt like the subplot where they ran out of money.
Yeah, exactly. They were like, let's show what's going on Earth, too. And really, it's just like him at a broken-down building, him in a car, and him at their apartment. But...
Or in this bunker, yeah. This, like, underground shelter.
Yeah, it's just...
Which, like, I think is supposed to be a nod to 10 Cloverfield Lane, but is still, like, he's just trapped in this underground bunker for, like, the last third of the movie.
And then he finally gets on the phone with the guy who's, I guess, at NASA or whatever the space organization that sent this thing up is called. I don't know what that would be. And he's talking to him, and they're like, hey, we found the space station. She's coming back. And he's like... With these things here, tell him not to come back. Tell him not to come back. Don't let him come back. And then it cuts to, like, this scene of, like, this wide shot of clouds. And then this monster pops out of the clouds. And then the movie's over. And they're like, oh. Which I guess would have given me more excitement, I guess, if I had seen the first. Or if I had seen 10 Cloverfield Lane. But, like, still no. I don't know.
Right.
I don't know how I would have felt.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, I mean, I knew that was... coming, but, like, I'd like read something about mentioning that, but, like, I still found it, like, pretty, like, fun and satisfying. And I think it actually is, yeah, it's a little bit closer to the monster in the first Cloverfield movie, but it's still not clear how this connect the three movies connect, because, like, none of the earlier Cloverfield movies seems to take place in
the same world,
in this universe where energy is scarce and there are these people in space trying to, like, start this particle accelerator. Although one possibility is that
this is a prequel.
The guy in the newscast, he actually says, like, hey, like, you know, this could actually send monsters anywhere into the past, into the future. And, you know, so maybe they're, like, all in, like sort of related universes, or, like, that another monster appeared, you know, in our present time rather than, like, in the future, which is where 10 Cloverfield seems to take place. The Cloverfield paradox seems to take place is, you know, monsters just appearing everywhere, all kinds of different times, all kinds of different universes. It's not like a moment where you're like, oh, I see, it all connects. You're more just kind of like, all right, that's a cool monster. All right, whatever.
Well, in, like, the whole movie, you expect aliens and don't get them, really.
That's true.
Or you get the hint of them, but you're like, this is unclear. And then they kill the guy who maybe had an alien interference of some sort. And you're like, I don't really get it. And then at the very end, they're like, oh, there were... I mean, they're not even aliens. They're, like, monsters. It's not clear that they're aliens, right? And it's just...
But I don't think the... Yeah, and I don't know that the monsters had anything to do with what happened on the station. The monsters appeared on Earth and, like, wreaked havoc, but on the station it seemed more just like this alternate dimension doesn't like you being here, so it's causing all this weird shit to happen,
which is silly.
It's very unsatisfying,
yeah,
as an explanation.
So, long story short, if I could have gotten those hour and 48 minutes back, I would, but I suffered through it for you listeners and for Anthony, so you're welcome.
That's right. Well, we wanted to be topical, and we were, but we did suffer a little for it. I wouldn't necessarily hate it to say I'm sorry I saw it, but, like, I am bummed out just because it seemed like there were, like, a lot of really talented people involved in this movie, and it just doesn't work at all.
Yeah,
especially the second.
I might even say, like, it's the worst thing J.J. Abrams has been a part of.
Oh, interesting.
I would need to look at the full list to make sure I stand behind that, but. Like, I'll at least throw it out there here.
Yeah, I haven't seen all of his TV stuff, so I can't say for sure. But among his movies, I would say I think this is probably the worst movie that he's produced. I'm also not a fan of Star Trek Into Darkness, but at least that one I was entertained while I watched it. It was more like afterwards. I was like, that was really stupid, and I'm mad about some things in it. But I was entertained, whereas this one, for the whole second half, I was just kind of like, furrowing my eyebrows and being like, where is this going? What is this?
Yeah, I haven't seen all of this stuff. I'm looking at his IMDb right now, but, like, I still think I'm right. So.
Yeah, and so, I mean, tying it back to that sort of the news angle, they're definitely one of the rumors, essentially, is that they were going to release this in theaters, and then they kind of felt like, oh, this is going to bomb if we put it in theaters, because no one is, you know, like, the buzz on this is going to be so bad, it's just going to kill the movie, no one's going to come out to see it, and so they're basically kind of like, how can we just, you know, recoup our budget on this, and we'll just basically sell it to Netflix for the cost of making the film.
And given that Netflix did that commercial, like, how much you want to bet Netflix, like, essentially stole this movie on the cheap? You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I bet they negotiated it down so much and then spent like $5 million on that commercial, and we're just like, whatever, let's do it.
Yeah. I think actually the reports were that Netflix paid like $45 million.
What?
For the movie, which is basically what the budget was. The budget was $45 million.
Yeah.
Which is, let's say, which is half the cost of Bright, which is a movie that I think is equally dumb as this. And they seem to be happy with how Bright is done in terms of just viewership. So it may be that because of the rollout strategy in particular, like, they just got a bunch of people watching it, and so they're happy with it, even if people think the movie sucks.
Yeah, like, this isn't an original series, so I don't think this is one of those things. I mean, not that, like, any of Netflix's original series are very, like, in-house necessarily, right? They're, like, produced with other companies.
Mostly,
and stuff.
Yeah.
But this isn't, like, a tarnish on Netflix's credibility. It's just, like, watch it, people. Just watch it. We don't care if you like it.
It's a tarnish in the sense that, like, you just, you know, like, when you kind of, like you, it's another sign that, like, just because something comes from Netflix, you shouldn't necessarily think it'll be good. It can mean anything.
Yeah.
Right? It's just like, hey, we think we can get what, like, the Netflix original label means, is essentially just, we think we can spend some money and get you to click on this.
Right.
And sometimes that results in really good stuff, and sometimes it doesn't. And I think, particularly on the movie side, that has not resulted in that much good content yet, with some exceptions like Okja and the Meyerowitz stories last year, but mostly, especially these really high profile things of Cloverfield and Bright, has resulted in things that are very bad.
Yeah, it seems like on the movie side, like, the indie kind of more character based stuff would do better for Netflix than, like, this production value bang 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 stuff would, but maybe I'm wrong, I don't know.
Yeah, I guess we'll see. I think they're trying to do both. I mean, I think they want to, you know, acquire indie movies and maybe fund some indie movies, but they also want to do kind of bigger, you know, the equivalent of, like, a Hollywood blockbuster. And, I mean, you know, to be fair, most Hollywood studios, when they make blockbusters, most of them are bad, and once in a while they make a really good one. So it's not like Netflix just doesn't have much of a track record either way yet.
Yeah, we'll give it a few years, see how they do.
That's right. And as always, just your obligatory reminder that if you enjoyed the show, feel free to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or any other podcast app. Leave us a review in Apple Podcasts. And even if you don't do any of those things, thank you so much for listening.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.